Welcome to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kdalska. The newsroom is celebrating our successful fund drive with some of our favorite stories from this year so far. The FBI started a new initiative to gather more data about cases involving missing and murdered Indigenous people in Wyoming.
Okay, this is right there in front of them. Are they going to engage? And I've been encouraging people, you're not going to know unless you try.
We'll hear from the Senate reading clerk about his job and his voice.
One of my best friends on the Senate session staff just gives me constant heartache about people tuning in because I'm talking.
And Wyoming leads the nation in self-employed businesses. We hear from some.
It's very much a joint effort here,
We try.
Those stories and more coming up on Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News.
Wyoming Public Radio now takes you around Wyoming. You'll hear about interesting stories and events from just down the street and around the state. Around Wyoming, weekday mornings at 6:06 and 8:06, and afternoons at 1:04 and 4:50. You can also subscribe to our daily roundup newsletter at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Every day, Wyoming Public Radio brings you the news, from the latest on the pandemic recovery to ongoing issues of race, climate change, energy, and the economy. Tune in for what's happening here in Wyoming, around the Mountain West, and beyond with state and regional news updates during Morning Edition, Here and Now, and All Things Considered. And you can find the latest news anytime at wyomingpublicmedia.org. Stay informed with Wyoming Public Radio.
Welcome to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kdalska. In honor of a successful fund drive, the newsroom picked some of our favorite stories of 2024 so far. We start with some new projects we've started this year. Wyoming Public Radio wants to hear from you, our listeners, about the upcoming election. So we partnered with the team at America Amplified to ensure that you have the information you need to participate in the general election in November. As part of that partnership, we launched a tool on our website to answer your questions. Wyoming Public Radio's Ivy Engel spoke with Alyssa Barbara, America Amplified's managing director, about the project and the new tool.
Well, there's kind of two goals. One, America Amplified has been around since 2019. We are a Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded initiative to support community engagement journalism in public media. And so that means we are helping public media stations, many spread around the country, to better engage with their communities, to have a better sense of who their communities are and what their information needs are, to be a public service journalism operation. So that's number one. We just launched an election 2024 initiative, which is more directly focused on the upcoming election. We have some 57 stations across the country reaching audiences in all 50 states, to ensure that their communities have the information they need to confidently participate in the upcoming election. So on a very narrow focus, what do you need to know about how to cast your vote? Not who to cast your vote for, but how to cast your vote, how to actually go through the process of casting a ballot.
And as part of that election initiative, there's the Harkin Embed or Harkin tool that public radio stations are able to use. Can you kind of tell me a little bit about how it works?
Yeah, Harkin, again, is just an engagement tool. It's a way to basically prompt questions from your audience and your community. And it is a web-based embed or a call out that goes on your website at its bare minimum that basically says, has a prompt in it. What questions do you have about participating in the upcoming election? And you as an audience member can say, where can I get my absentee ballot? You put that question in, you give us your name, your email, and your zip code, and then we will work to answer that question.
Okay, yeah. And I know it uses AI for part of the information gathering. Can you kind of speak to why you chose to use AI and kind of how that factors into everything?
Okay, Harkin doesn't use AI. Harkin just receives the questions. But we're working, as I said, with stations all around the country. And we're not just giving them the question prompt. We're also helping them in answering the questions. So if we're going to be answering questions about elections in 50-some states, we're going to need a little bit of help. And that's where AI comes in. So most of the information that you're going to need to figure out how to vote is available usually on your Secretary of State's website or whoever in your state regulates the election process. So what we did is working with a database and analysis company, we set up a database where we used generative AI to scrape those Secretary of State websites for all the information, officially verified information we may need to answer questions in all 50 states. You know, we have a full-time staff of 5, and then we have 2 other people that we are calling our engagement support staff. And they are the people who are kind of behind the curtains, as it were, as questions come in from Wyoming or wherever in the country about the voting process. It gets fed into this Harkin engagement management system and then is sent over to that database that I just talked about. The database will scrape the information from the Wyoming Secretary of State's website and will spit out an answer. And then we have a human being who will be looking at that answer, and then that answer will go back to the person who sent in the question. So the AI is what helps us gather the information for the database to answer the questions.
Okay, that makes sense. So, I mean, it seems like there's quite a bit of human involvement in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So our engagement staff will, verify the source, translate the language, and then also send it to the news director or the reporter at the station in that state to say, here's the answer we came up with. Does that look okay? And that needs a thumbs up from that station as well. Eventually, after you've received 3 or 4 or 5 really good, relevant questions, we will create an FAQ that you can produce for your website and for your audience.
How does this benefit the public and our listeners? What are they getting out of it?
Well, they're getting an easy way to get the information that they need about the election. I mean, you know, many of us, especially in the journalism world, we know like, what's the deadline for sending in my absentee ballot? And we may sit down and talk to Google about that. This is a way they know they can come to you for those answers. You'll do the work and make it easy for them.
Right. Okay. I know there was a pilot program of this project. Can you speak a little bit about that and kind of what you've learned or changed since then to benefit this iteration of the project?
Yeah. So we did a pilot project for the midterm elections in 2022. We were working with 30 stations across 25 states. Similar project. We provided them with a Harkin embed. One of the big differences that project began in May and the election was in November. This project began a year earlier, right? A year before the election, because to really build trust with your audience and your community, you have to start earlier and you really have to go out and be there and be in front of them. It's not just an election project. It's really about a long-term relationship that you're developing with your audience. What we learned was that a lot of public radio listeners don't have a lot of questions about how to vote. It's a voting population for the most part. They pretty much have that down. They did have questions about judicial candidates in many places, you know, like how do I decide which judges to vote for? Because there's usually not a lot of information about that. And we also just recognize that we need to be available to answer all kinds of questions that come in, whether they be about voting processes or about issues. If a question comes in, something that was very particular to Wyoming, or maybe even very particular to a community in Wyoming, like Cheyenne or someplace like that, that you all would be able to step in and provide an answer to that question so that that listener, that audience member, recognizes that he or she is being heard. And they're not just sending this question off into the void.
That kind of leads to my other question of, if someone submits a question that's not just a factual, you know, what date do I need to get this in for? That's okay. And we will still work to answer that. And the team with Harkin will work with Wyoming Public Radio to answer that, correct?
Absolutely. That is definitely our goal. This year, we're really trying to step it up a little bit and be much more responsive. But it's also on stations like you all to do that too. We want to take a lot of the work away from you, but in the end, if to answer those questions, it's going to come back to you all.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you for speaking with me.
No problem. Thanks, Ivy.
That was Wyoming Public Radio's Ivy Engel speaking with Alyssa Barbara about our partnership with America Amplified. The Harkin tool is live on our website's homepage, wyomingpublicmedia.org, so please ask us questions. Wyoming Public Radio's podcast, The Modern West, is in the middle of a new season, but the format is pretty different from how we've done things in the past. We're going out in the field with some of the reporters you'll recognize from Open Spaces. A couple of weeks ago, I spoke with The Modern West host and producer, Melody Edwards, about the decision to try something new this time around. Thanks for being here, Melody.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell me about the very different format of this season of the podcast, and why are we breaking the mold?
You know, it just seems like we have such a gift with the reporters that we have at this station, especially just right now. There's just an amazing talent in this newsroom right now. And they are out there doing these great stories. And I know as a reporter who is out there in the field that it's really kind of can be frustrating because you'll go out and do this really great story and then you have to make it into a teeny tiny story for air. And so this is an opportunity for them to kind of try doing something a little longer with some of the stories that they really love the best. We've got some really fun stuff happening, and we can take, you know, our listeners out all over Wyoming and beyond, out in the field, and just experience some of these really great stories that these guys are doing.
Yeah, I've seen the lineup, and it looks like we're getting an action-packed season. What are some of the big adventures we'll hear about?
Yeah, so episode one, which actually has already come out this week, so people can go and listen to it right this minute if they wanted, is Hannah Haberman, and she ends up going out. Folks might actually remember when she did this story for Open Spaces. She went out on the anniversary of the day 100 years after Eleanor Davis was the first recorded woman to climb Grand Teton, and went up and climbed this mountain with a group of other women on that anniversary. So yeah, she had this great experience and had to do a story that was only 5 minutes long for Open Spaces, but now she's going to have an opportunity for The Modern West to share the full experience of that. And it was actually a very personal experience for her. So that's another whole aspect of the story that she gets to include in this podcast version. The other thing, we've got Caitlin Tan. She went to Atlantic City, which is on South Pass, and everybody knows that drive. And maybe you haven't stopped over and gone and visited Atlantic City, which is a really cool historic little town. But Caitlin did, and she happened to be on her bicycle when she did it. And she encountered all these other bicyclists and hikers, and she was like, what is going on here? So she did a really great podcast version of that story. And so we get to go to Atlantic City and just wander all around, talking to all the crazy characters that live in Atlantic City. So that's going to be episode two. There's many more. We have many adventures in this season, and so everybody needs to come and join us and tag along on these really cool adventures.
Can you delve into the stories that you're contributing for this season?
Sure. I will be doing an episode about the arrival of wolves. They migrated down from Yellowstone and wandered into Colorado. And as many people know, Colorado is now actually introducing wolves in the state. They just released their first 10. But these wolves actually migrated in naturally, and that was 5 years before this. So those ranchers have actually had 5 years of experience to kind of pass along that information. And I think that there has just been, in the reporting about the arrival of the wolves there, there's been a lot of us versus them. And so what I really wanted to do is go to my own community where I knew a lot of people and show that there's actually a much more nuanced feelings about these wolves. And so that's kind of what I did with that story. And I think it's been really cool to just go out and hear from lots and lots of different points of view. The other story that I am working on is going to be episode 5, and I went to the Wyoming Honor Farm, which is, it's actually a prison where prisoners, and this is a minimum security prison, they're actually, you know, out growing the hay, feeding the hay to the cattle. When I was up there, it was calving season, so they were spending all day, hours and hours, taking care of the mama cows as they were giving birth and, like, bringing all of these babies into the world. There was baby calves everywhere. Wow. It was adorable. But the other thing, the really cool thing, is that they have these prisoners also training wild horses. They have a collaboration with the BLM, and they are taking horses when they're pretty young and getting, you know, prisoners who are, you know, really struggling with all sorts of other things that they are dealing with, and feelings of incarceration and being unable to, you know, they're imprisoned and they are unable to leave. And here it is, they're dealing with a wild horse that was wild, and then now it's now imprisoned and dealing with the feeling of, like, okay, how do I come to terms with being a tame animal now? And so it's just, the parallels were really interesting. And I got to talk to two prisoners who were very articulate about that, how that has been therapeutic for them to be working with these animals. Boy, they had really bonded with these horses. And so I got to get out into the corrals with them as they were training them. And so I'm really excited to share that story.
Well, it sounds like a very exciting season. When can we start hearing these episodes, and where can we find them?
So the first episode just dropped, and that was Hannah Haberman's episode about climbing Grand Teton. Then episode 2 is coming out in 2 weeks, and so that one will be the one with Caitlin Tan visiting the Atlantic City on South Pass. And every 2 weeks after that, every Wednesday, every other Wednesday, we will be having a new episode. So yeah, enjoy finding those in your feed, wherever it is that you get podcasts. Or if you like, you can also go and find them at wyomingpublicmedia.org. We have a podcast tab. You can drop that down, and there we are, Modern West, and click and go.
Amazing. Well, Melody Edwards, host and producer of the Modern West podcast, thank you for being here with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Next, we revisit some of our favorite stories from the legislative session. This is Open Spaces.
I'm Anna Sale, host of the podcast Death, Sex, and Money, and a devoted listener to Wyoming Public Radio. When I'm in Wyoming and listening to Wyoming Public Radio, it's like another way to realize how incredible the relationship you can have between a radio and a listener is, because Wyoming is so sparsely populated. Like, you are speaking to so many people who are spread out across this broad landscape, and you're having this interaction. I kind of think of it as similar to podcasting. Like, you're putting your voice out there, and you're not really knowing what's going on in someone's life, but they could be, like, totally isolated on their own little patch of land in this big state and feeling connected. I love, like, hearing people mention listening to Wyoming Public Radio when they're doing things, when they're just, like, out. It's them and the elements and Wyoming Public Radio, you know? So it's again, a reminder of just how sacred that relationship between, you know, audio and a listener can be.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. Now, we're going to take a step back to the first day of the Wyoming legislature's budget session. Every other year, the lawmakers spend 4 weeks working to pass a state balanced budget. From funding public schools to healthcare, public safety to facilities, lawmakers weigh the pros and cons of each bill with an eye toward the state's needs, as well as its funding sources. The budget session is unique because bills require a two-thirds majority to be considered by the full House or Senate. Wyoming Public Radio's David Dudley reports on how an unprecedented number of committee bills were killed this year through two-thirds majority.
It's Wednesday evening, a week and a half into this year's budget session. Lander Representative Lloyd Larson stands on the House floor. He votes on a bill, then runs upstairs toward a meeting room off the House gallery. He wants to talk about the first day of the budget session, when lawmakers killed an extraordinary number of bills.
The first day, we killed 13 committee bills, which was extremely disappointing because I think we spent about $600,000 on legislative per diem and travel expenses.
The number is closer to $680,000. That includes the time and effort that go into building, drafting, and vetting new legislation during the interim. That's the rest of the year when lawmakers are not in session.
And we spend all that time putting together what those committees felt like were a good bill, and we've just flushed that down the toilet.
Larson says the reason so many bills were killed is that the Wyoming Freedom Caucus, a hardline faction of the GOP, has enough members and allies to defeat bills upon introduction.
I'm sure in their minds that they felt that, for whatever reason, that was the right thing to do. I would argue that, and I'd push back, and I'd say that was a mistake.
Gillette Representative John Baer is a member of the Wyoming Freedom Caucus. He acknowledges that they are a minority within the legislature, but he believes they represent a majority of Wyomingites.
And you've seen an increase in what we call the Wyoming Freedom Caucus, which is a very conservative group looking for common sense, you know, kitchen table type of ideology, you know, just what are the people concerned about? That's what we're bringing to the legislature.
One of the bills that was killed on the first day by Baer and other House members was the mental health care redesign bill. It would have ensured that people living with a severe mental health disorder would have access to crucial services when their insurance companies won't cover them. It would have also helped low-income people who don't have insurance living at or below 200% of the federal poverty line. Those services include treatment for substance abuse disorder, a major driver of suicide. Baer says he voted against the bill because it was trying to solve mental health issues through government action rather than social solutions.
Those decisions were, for me personally, were based on spending and expansion of government and whether or not I thought it was really a good solution for the society.
Andy Somerville is one of the advocates for that bill. She's the executive director for the Wyoming Association of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Centers. Somerville says that even as Wyoming recently slid from first in the nation to third in per capita suicide rate, there's still much work to be done.
I think there's still some stigma around mental health. I think there's some stigma about healthcare in general that we're still fighting as a state. Hopefully we can move past that.
When asked why lawmakers may be reluctant to fund such programs, Somerville says Wyomingites are fiercely independent, and that's not likely to change.
In Wyoming, in general, we like to take care of ourselves. But one of the things that I think we forget about is that we also take care of our neighbors and we take care of our communities.
Representative Lloyd Larson agrees with Baer's notion that lawmakers are there to serve voters, but that may be where the agreement ends. Larson says the two-thirds rule gives a minority group of lawmakers the power to decide which bills the majority would consider. Larson says the solution lies in getting more people involved in the process to ensure that their voices are heard. He compares that process to maintaining a car.
But if you don't do that, if you aren't paying attention or just intentionally neglect that, trying to make your penny stretch a little further, that's when you have a blowout going down the icy road. And that's what we don't want to have happen here.
While these bills were killed early during this budget session, they may return in next year's legislative session when the two-thirds majority is not needed. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm David Dudley.
If you've tuned in to a live stream or sat in the gallery of the Wyoming Senate during a legislative session, odds are you'll hear the dulcet voice of Randy Fetzer reading out bill descriptions to throngs of seated lawmakers. Wyoming Public Radio's Chris Clements found out more about the person behind that voice.
It looks very funny for me to see the desk cleared.
It's been about a month since this year's legislative budget session ended, but Randy Fetzer settles back into his seat at the front of the Senate chambers like it's still underway.
And this is my view of the glass. It's just spectacular.
As the Senate reading clerk, he's in the spotlight while reading out bills to dozens of Wyoming's most powerful political figures.
Endurance gets really challenging. When the days get long, the chair gets really, really uncomfortable. And for those of us here, especially the assistant chief clerk and for me, we can't get up and move around at all during the time that we're gaveled in.
But Fetzer's job is purely as support staff, not as a decision maker. He keeps his thoughts and opinions about ongoing proceedings to himself. As a reading clerk, he reads every bill number, title, sponsor, and enacting clause for legislation that passes through the Senate, often several times. Here's just a taste.
February 16, 2024, Mr. President, Committee Number 4, Education, to whom is referred Senate File 19, Developmental Preschool Funding, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Biteman, Brennan, Rothfuss, Scott, and Steinmetz, Senator Scott, Chairman.
For the last 9 years, Fetzer has worked part-time as a reading clerk in Cheyenne. As he can attest, clerks must adapt to fast-paced, constantly changing circumstances. He's often handed a bill jacket relating to subjects like carbon capture or abortion regulations, or even a letter from Governor Mark Gordon.
So those are completely cold reads at that point. I can sometimes get lost and forget which direction something's going. Yeah, it can move quickly sometimes.
Then he's got to fire off the information to lawmakers with expeditious speed while remembering to enunciate clearly and use good diction. Anyone who sat in the Senate gallery and observed legislators as they debate, decry, and defend bills has almost certainly heard Fetzer's voice guiding the way.
The reading clerk, please read the bills.
Senate Day 1, Consent List B. The following 7 bills are sponsored by the Judiciary Committee. Senate File 30, Influencing Jurors and Witnesses, Judges Amendment. Senate File 31, Sex Offender Registration, Promoting Obscenity. Senate File 32, Hemp limitations on psychoactive substances.
Fetzer is well known around the Capitol for having a mellifluous vocal style. He was a radio host in Colorado for years. And after retiring from teaching English at Laramie County Community College, he's landed himself a gig here in the Wyoming legislature.
One of my best friends on the Senate session staff just gives me constant heartache about people tuning in because I'm talking. And I tell everybody, don't listen to what Dick says.
Fetzer says the admiration of his vocal abilities reminds him of a line from a play by Shakespeare.
It's a comedic line. One of the characters, when he misunderstands some things that are being said, looks back at the person giving him heartache and says, oh, it's the gifts God gives. But really, that's just it. It's just my voice.
The attitude Fetzer tries to keep when working around so many politicians is simple.
Do the best possible read to help the senators do their job. Try not to make a mistake.
For the rest of the year, Fetzer enjoys singing as a bass in the local choir and visiting microbreweries throughout the state. According to him, it's much more relaxing than this part-time gig, but he says he has no plans to quit anytime soon. Reporters, lawmakers, and citizens will continue to hear his voice echoing through the Senate chambers. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Chris Clements.
Up next, we'll hear about a new initiative by the FBI in Wyoming. This is Open Spaces.
My name is Conrad Smith. I grew up in Kansas, but I've lived in Laramie for 18 years now. I think that the primary function of public radio, at least in my opinion, is news and keeping public officials accountable. The entertainment is available many other places, but good quality news is not widely available, and I do believe Wyoming Public Radio has the best broadcast news in the United States right now. The service public radio provides is worth paying for, I guess quite simply. Anybody who listens a lot has kind of a moral obligation to help pay the bills.
Begin or renew your membership on our secure website, wyomingpublicmedia.org. Click on the Pledge Now link. Thanks for your support.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. From Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Camila Kadalska. The newsroom is celebrating a successful fund drive with some of our favorite stories this year from Open Spaces so far. Back in February, the FBI announced a new initiative to gather more data about Native Americans who've gone missing or been murdered in cases that haven't been closed. This issue has been a crisis for decades. Between 2011 and 2020, over 700 Native people were reported missing in the state. Wyoming Public Radio's Hanna Haberman has more on how the federal agency is hoping to build trust with community members on the reservation.
John Washakie stands at a podium wearing an orange button-up shirt and beaded rose bolo tie. The podium is draped with a blue cloth that reads Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Abigail Washakie was my niece. She had a family, a home, and then she drifted off and became involved with a person and came up missing for a few days.
The Eastern Shoshone Business Councilman is speaking at a press conference in Fort Washakie about a new FBI initiative addressing the missing and murdered Indigenous Persons Crisis, or MMIP.
She was murdered and put in a trash bin in Riverton.
Washakie says that while Abigail's case was solved thanks to the FBI and other law enforcement agencies, it often doesn't end that way.
And I can only encourage you today to come forward with information related to any unresolved cases or where you may know of some missing person.
The FBI is the main agency that investigates these sorts of crimes when they involve tribal members on the Wind River Reservation. And they've now set up a designated email account and tip line to collect new information from community members. Kara Chambers is the director of the Wyoming Division of Victim Services and the chair of the state MMIP task force.
I think it was really born out of that thought that, well, you know, you have citizens who are talking about lost loved ones and these cases that they've never gotten resolution.
In 2019, she had a conversation with the FBI Victim Services advocate. They realized that there's a need for more communication between the agency and community members.
They're like, well, you know, they keep talking about these cold cases, but, you know, technically we don't. I mean, any lead that we had was, you know, fully investigated.
So the FBI was saying there were no cold cases, but people on the ground were saying otherwise. Chambers says this new initiative gives families another chance to do a deeper dive.
And give that opportunity for these families who maybe didn't have the courage at the time or didn't have all the information.
Nicole Wagon is a Northern Arapaho MMIP advocate and serves on the state's MMIP task force with Chambers. She says there's a lack of trust of the agency on the reservation, which comes, in part, from a lack of visibility.
How do we get that into our schools that they're real and they do exist? People talk about it, but it's just like almost a figment of people's imagination if you think about it.
Wagon lost two daughters to the MMIP crisis and worked with state law enforcement to solve the murder of her daughter Jocelyn. She hopes the new initiative will be another avenue for bringing justice.
Okay, this is right there in front of them. Are they going to engage? And I've been encouraging people, you're not going to know unless you try.
Northern Arapaho Business Council Chairman Lloyd Goggles agrees. The former patrolman says he's seen the mistrust firsthand.
There is hesitancy amongst the public. You know, when they have the chance to divulge something, you know, there's a need to protect their own.
Special Agent Leonard Carollo oversees all FBI operations in Wyoming. He recognizes that tribal members haven't always been comfortable working with the agency in the past.
I would be remiss if I sat up here today and said that we've done everything correctly, that we have not made any mistakes. I can't say that. We acknowledge that. We accept that.
The FBI hopes to build that trust by hosting in-person MMIP information gathering sessions on the reservation. After 90 days, the FBI will start researching and investigating the tips they receive.
In situations where the FBI does not have jurisdiction, information will be forwarded to the appropriate agency.
Those with tips can email wymmip@fbi.gov or leave a message at 307-433-3221. Callers who leave a name and phone number will receive a return call. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Hanna Haberman.
The tribes are still working on setting up the in-person MMIP information gathering sessions on the reservation. Attracting movie makers to Wyoming has its challenges, mainly because the state does not offer financial incentives for filmmakers like other surrounding states, including Montana. Tourism advocates have tried and failed to get lawmakers to create a film rebate incentive program. Now, advocates in Cody are taking another route to try to attract films to the region. Wyoming Public Radio's Olivia Wheats reports.
Just the absolute variety of Cody, Wyoming. Everything you see on here is a piece of history.
A vintage rodeo poster, an elk mount, antique washboards. These are some of the items hanging on the walls, viewable from the dance floor at Cassie's Steakhouse, where Mike Canada is organizing an open mic night.
This next song I'm going to sing for you guys, this is an original song.
On a weeknight in February, a handful of locals munch on steaks and baked potatoes while they enjoy the music. But this time of year, the wooden dance floor is pretty empty. But later this year, actor Hannah Barefoot plans to pack this former brothel turned cowboy bar and restaurant with a film crew to shoot part of her movie, Midnight Clear. She says it's a Western set during Christmas, where a single mom tries to save her family's struggling dude ranch.
They always say, write what you know. And as I was starting to think about what this script would be, I just started to think about how much I love my hometown. I love Cody. I love Wyoming in general.
Barefoot says as the characters and the story started coming together, there was no question it had to be set in Cody, at places like the Irma Hotel, the Cowboy Palace Western Wear Shop, and her family friend's dude ranch near Yellowstone. People in Hollywood liked the idea.
But because Wyoming doesn't have a film industry, there's not a tax incentive, there's no crew. And so they were like, yeah, we love the script, we'll shoot it in Canada. Or we love the script, we'll shoot it in Montana or New Mexico.
Wyoming had a film incentive rebate program that got started in 2009, but it went through some budget cuts and it sunsetted in 2018. In 2019, the legislature voted not to continue it. Ever since, there have been efforts to bring it back. During last year's legislative session, Wyoming Department of Tourism Executive Director Diane Schober spoke to a committee about the program's success.
And during that time, there were over 30 productions that took place. And the economic contributions and qualified expenditures during that time were $18,329,000. Of that $18 million, $9,125,000 were in crew and salary and wages for Wyoming qualified workforce. That totaled 320 different crew.
In the proposed program, some productions could qualify for up to a 30% rebate for Wyoming expenses for things like hiring local staff and production equipment rentals. According to a document from the Wyoming Department of Tourism, the state is losing out to other states with film incentives, including projects like Wind River, Longmire, and 1883, one of the Yellowstone prequels. Kelly Estes runs the film office in Casper and a newly formed one in Cody. He told the committee last year that he scouted locations several times for 1883.
They wanted locations outside of Casper near Independence Rock. And we had things set up for them, but the incentive drew them to Montana since we didn't have that available to us.
A University of Montana study showed that in 1 year, 2.1 million people were inspired by the Yellowstone TV show to visit Montana. And when they came, they spent an estimated $730 million. At the legislative meeting, several members of the committee expressed concern over how Wyoming could be depicted in film projects, including Rollins representative Donald Burkhart.
If a company, film company, came to Wyoming and met all of these requirements and produced a documentary that was derogatory and disruptive to our mineral extraction industry, would they qualify for these?
Cody Representative Sandy Newsom says even though the legislation ultimately received an 8-1 yes vote from the committee and was sent to the House for debate, it was not introduced on the House floor.
Well, I would like to bring it back, but there doesn't seem an appetite in the legislature for it at this point. We had a changeover of a lot of new members who are maybe ideologically opposed to incentives of any kind.
But for now, she's hoping the newly formed Cody Yellowstone Film Office will bring more business to Northwest Wyoming. The Park County Travel Council recently launched the film office. Ryan Hauk is the council's executive director.
At the moment, we're not able to offer really any incentives, but if they are able to book their picture in that winter time, we can get very aggressive on hotel rates for them.
The film office has already negotiated hotel room rates for Barefoot's upcoming movie and is helping her hire local talent. Barefoot says she hopes filming it in Cody during the off season will give her hometown an economic boost.
And we want to then take this film that's done without a film incentive and then show, look how much we did without a film incentive. How much more could we do? How much more could we accomplish if there were a film incentive and if there were an actual industry that were a viable, you know, a viable economic industry for the state?
Barefoot's film, Midnight Clear, will be shot in Cody later this year. She anticipates releasing it before the holidays in 2025. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Olivia Wheats at the Center of the West in Cody.
Up next, we hear from some Wyoming entrepreneurs. This is Open Spaces.
Coming up on Wyoming Sounds, it's New Music Wednesday with me, Melanie Nielsen. Join me for new music from Cowboy Ross Cooper, The Fratellis in Babe Rainbow, Fruit Bats, Corb Lund, and this one from Galen McKinney from the McKinney Zone. Tune in 9 to noon for Wyoming Sounds on Wyoming Public Radio.
This time on the Modern West, the historic mining town of Atlantic City has seen lots of booms and busts.
Atlantic City had 5 booms prior to the Continental Divide Trail, which is our 6th.
The 6th boom. It's part 2 of our series, High Altitude Tales. Find it under podcasts at wyomingpublicmedia.org.
Welcome back to Open Spaces. Did you know Wyoming leads the nation in self-employed businesses? There's a few reasons why Wyoming has become a hotbed for self-starters, and Wyoming Public Radio's Jordan Uplinger dives into why.
Yeah, so I guess it's like the leftovers, but I would basically make this into like a ball and then flatten up a little bit and then throw it in the slab roller. And then, yeah, you kind of just throw a ball of clay.
Yasmin Acosta shows me how she turned a brick of clay into a new home for plants. She runs a pottery business called Little Leaf in Laramie, Wyoming. It started as a hobby for her, growing houseplants and making pottery to hold them. But when she started posting pictures of her work online,
I think people were like, oh, I love that. Do you sell it? And the first time I actually sold, like took some of my stuff to the farmer's market, I was so scared. I was like, what if people think it's like not great? Because in my head, I was like, I'm so new at this.
2 years later, Yasmin's studio is covered with ongoing projects and a large machine for pressing clay. Yasmin is part of 44 million Americans who are self-employed. Starting your own business has become a much more realistic goal in the past few years due to increased internet access and economic change. People in Wyoming have jumped on that opportunity. Wyoming has the highest rate of entrepreneurs in the country, but Sheridan County has the most in our state. Some 50% of residents own their own business. One such couple is the Sturdivant family. Micah Sturdivant is the owner, lead designer, and quote, chief bucket washer at Whirly Girl Flowers.
And I was able to go full-time, quit my office job in 2018, and be home full-time, operate the floral studio.
And her husband, Nathan, a licensed land surveyor, runs Northern Wyoming Surveys.
About, I don't know, 2020, I opened my doors up and kicked off. It was a tough start, but it's been super fun.
In addition to their businesses, the Sturdivants are also raising a family.
The first year and a half that we had our son, I was still working part-time in an office setting, and it just was heartbreaking to have to leave him somewhere else with somebody else. So that was my primary, like, that was my motivating factor, to be able to build something so that I could be home with him, but also have a little bit more control over our earning potential.
However, being self-employed doesn't mean working alone.
There is help. I end up going to help her schlep buckets sometimes. I end up building some of the archwork. I end up sometimes helping clean the floors in the studio and sweep all of the beautiful petals out the door.
Yeah. It's very much a like joint effort here, you know, like
we try.
Before we even launched his business, we used my business to help grow our savings so that we would have cushion, so that we weren't always operating on such a tiny margin, because the buck stops with us.
That joint effort and savings have paid off for them, in part thanks to Wyoming's business-friendly environment, such as the lack of individual or corporate income tax. But another reason is the luck of the marketplace.
There's no guarantees when starting your own business.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics says approximately 20% of small businesses fail within their first year. And that number goes up with each year, 30% by the end of the second year, 50% by the fifth. And in recent years, many who started a cell phone business when COVID hit have returned to the stability offered by a regular paycheck. So why, in Wyoming, are a little over one-third of all full and part-time jobs self-employed businesses? Well, according to Wenlin Liu, chief economist with the state of Wyoming, it's three simple factors: location, location, and you guessed it, population.
So I think one of the reasons we were the highest is that, you know, we are big state, but the smallest population, and relatively speaking, we do not have many large employees. So that's why probably for many people, we do not have that chance to become an employee.
According to Liu, self-employment was already growing faster than waged and salaried jobs. Once COVID hit, people began looking for alternative sources of income, less populated areas, and ways to save money. The result was places like Sheridan County exploding in self-employment rates.
Many workers probably lost jobs. They have to face the economic uncertainty. So that's why some of them create their own business.
While Liu notes this trend could change in the future, it appears that Wyoming will remain a heavily entrepreneurial state. Wyoming's population, tax rate, and ever-expanding broadband build-out means more and more people have the opportunity to try their hand at self-employment. If that sounds like you, here's some advice from fellow self-employed Wyomingites. Figure out your goals, save some money, get ready to be a jack of all trades instead of a master of one, and then
go for it. Because I was so scared and it took me a while to do it, but I love it and it was so great. I think people just need to take trust in themselves. Like, you got this, you're good, just do it.
For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Jordan Uplinger.
And in January, our region hosted the 29th Pedigree Stage Stop Sled Dog Race with $165,000 in prize money. It's one of the hardest races of its type in the world due to the length, elevation, and weather. And this year, one team was a bit different from the norm. Wyoming Public Radio's Caitlin Tan reports.
Lily, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Remy Kost stands behind his sleek dog sled in a tan snowsuit. His partner, Aurélie Doulot, stands by wearing a red flannel peppered with blonde dog hairs, likely from the team of 10 lean, hound-looking dogs hooked to Kost's sled.
He's going out for 20, 30 kilometers, depending on the trail.
Kost and Doulot are from France, but now live in Sweden. And Kost and the dogs are here to compete in the Pedigree Stage Stop race. They've been training in the Upper Green, just north of Pinedale, for the last couple weeks. As Kost readies for his training run, one surprisingly can't hear the dogs. Like, there's no barking. Doulot says that's intentional.
Less stress. We have for them and for us. We have time to take care of them, put the booties on and everything.
Kost gives them the cue, and they take off into the cold winter morning.
Okay!
Now, Kost doesn't speak much English, so you won't hear much of him in this story. But as Doulot explains, he's determined and dialed.
Remy starts at 4 o'clock in the morning to feed the dogs.
There's 31 dogs, so Kost takes three teams out for a training run every day, and the care for the dogs is around the clock. It's a lifestyle, but also a career. Kost is one of the best in Europe for mid-length sled dog races that average about 28 miles per day. So
it's time to compete now in the States.
If we wanted to keep in winning, in, we would have stayed in Europe. If we wanted to learn more and to change things to continue improving.
They flew all 31 dogs here and shipped their blue live-in bus. It's literally the size of a city bus.
Well, it's a European horse truck that is adapted for like the horses at the back and humans to live at the in front, that we bought and changed to adapt to have be able to have the dogs at the back.
It's their first time racing in North America and their first time in Wyoming seeing cowboys.
We went into the small restaurant and one guy came and he had the cowboy hat and he was like, oh, I had to catch my horses. They ran away and da-da. And we were like, oh, this is so cool.
Coming over here across an ocean isn't common in the sled dog world. Usually racers stick to their continent.
Because it's so expensive and it's so crazy and everything.
They had to save up and take out loans to make it work. The hope is to stay for at least a year, competing here and in Alaska, then training for the summer and competing again next year, all while living in their big blue bus. Dulat shows the mobile dog kennel in the back of the bus. There's two dogs per cage.
And they have their little toys that they love.
Like dog chews.
And this is also my massage table.
Dulat is a vet, and she massages the dogs every day, up to 30 minutes each. Each dog is treated like an athlete, but also like a family member.
Every litter, we choose a name. We have a theme, like Lord of the Rings, Star Wars. And so this is Frodo.
Frodo is black and white.
Frodo, come here, Frodo.
He shyly climbs out of his kennel onto the table, immediately lying down, awaiting his massage.
Ça va, mon Frodo? Now, regarde la caméra.
Back outside in the winter wind, Kost and the team return from their run.
Oh, they're here.
The dogs are panting and ready for water. Kost talks to Dulat about the outing. He's going to change the wax on his sled skis for the next training run.
Because it's not the same snow than we have in Sweden. Here you are more windy.
And then Kost feeds the dogs that just ran. He'll get the next team ready now for their training run, only pausing to drink a cup of coffee and maybe a cookie.
We found the best cookies ever in the little supermarket there.
Oh,
like the pumpkin and chocolate chip. Best cookies ever.
Which is saying something, because before being a top sled dog racer, Kost was a baker. In fact, he was named one of the best bakers in France. When he puts his mind to something, he gives it everything.
This is what makes super athletes or super person that reach their goals, that was in bakery or sled dogs, or maybe in 15 years it will be something else.
But now it's just grocery store pumpkin chocolate chip cookies and sled dog racing. Kost will keep training until the Pedigree Stage Stop race kicks off January 26th in Jackson, where 15 teams will compete for a $165,000 purse. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Caitlin Tan in the Upper Green.
Remy Kost was the winner of the 29th Pedigree Stage Stop Sled Dog Race. Thank you for listening to Open Spaces. The entire show and all the stories you heard here can be found on our website at wyomingpublicmedia.org. It can also be found wherever you get your podcasts, and we post all our stories on the station's social media platforms. Open Spaces is a production of Wyoming Public Radio News.